And that is because on the genetic testing bill, which is genetic privacy 937, they have one more amendment. They,
what are we going to do to the dash?
Consensus plus.
Let's see. 1005.
He's stuck in the...
He's stuck. There's a traffic accident, and they closed... right. They closed I-5. So we have several people that have called, and they won't be here, so we'll scratch 1005. Some of the first people are caught in that traffic, too. They're now detoured on 99.
Oh,
so,
I'm getting here
in
a time
limit. Uh-huh. On 5 or 4... 5...
While we're talking about the West Side Bypass, I owe Senator Schumer an apology.
Oh.
I just want everybody to know.
Write it down.
I went to Tualatin Community Education Center on Saturday, and I was supposed to be in Tualati Community Education Center because I was praying for that Western Bypass, so I owe you an apology.
Can I ask one question? Could I just use one thing? High speed rail? Is that no?
Very
okay. I just thought I was trying to help as much as possible.
I'm
sorry.
Going back to judiciary, this is not transportation. So 503 or 504, we won't do today. We'll reschedule that when the people have a chance to put the amendments. 721. We won't do, but 722 we will. 723 we won't do. And we will do 789 and 804, and we'll commence with a work session on 04. And
Mr. Chair, members, you've had this bill before you a few times, and what it does is specify what final orders, and other than contested cases, issued by the Water Resources Commission or the department will look like, what the contents of those final orders will be. And the dash... three amendments, I believe, was the final draft. There we go. Good. Thank you. To specify that on the first page of any such order, that the order will state that it is a final order, that it's subject to judicial review, and that the time limit in which a petition for review need be filed. And they further specify that any final orders that do not comply with those requirements are effectively not final orders. And the dash three reflects the consensus of the parties that have been before you, I think, three or four times now on this issue.
Chair moves the dash three amendments for Senate bill. Are we in public hearing or what do you do?
Work session.
Thank you. I never knew what he did. He left. Chair moves the dash three amendments to Senate bill 804. Is that correct? That is the High Council?
That's correct.
Is there any or are there some objections, complaints, praises or otherwise to the statement I've just made?
We'll do so.
Done.
You didn't ask for
it. I'll move the bill.
Oh, excuse me. Is there any objection?
Did you want to move the bill?
Did you want to move the bill or just amend it?
I was going to move the bill.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not doing anything. I'm not violating the guy, am I?
Sorry.
I'm not. The chair moves Senate bill.
Okay.
Composure. Senate bill 804 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Are there any objections to that? Who would like to carry this bill?
Senator.
Senator Burdick, thank you very much. We just took care of Senate Bill 805 without violating it.
804
without violating it. That's the phrase they use, and I got the trouble. Did I make a mistake?
No. Would you record me as an eyewitness on that, please?
Oh.
All right. Let's go to 722. We're going out of Senate Bill 722, and we have some, if you recall last time, there were some technical type amendments, and we're getting those right now.
Okay. In addition to that, if you recall, there's an opting out section for everyone excluding the state of Oregon and the school district, and we included that the community colleges shouldn't opt out either. That's about 10,000 additional employees. My reason for doing that is I want the actuary to tell us, and he has in the past, that by allowing the cities and the counties and special districts to have the option of opting out, it doesn't affect the fund. And it's put it in jeopardy in any way. And on the issue of the community colleges, that became a little bit of a debate. And so I didn't want that issue to cloud what we're trying to do on PERS. And so I said that the moment and for this, the purpose of this bill, a community colleges can't opt out. Now, Senator Duncan has a bill that was introduced specifically for that purpose. And so you might face that issue at a later time on the floor. But for purposes of this bill, I didn't do that.
Do you want to talk about
that? Yeah. Let me tell you what the bill accomplishes. It provides for a third tier for hires after January 1st, 2000. So it affects no one in the system now. And it will begin January 1st, the year 2000. That's an easier time for everyone to draw that line and to put information into the computer and et cetera. The benefit calculation will be based on a pension funded by employer contributions and an annuity funded by employee contributions. That's the pension plus annuity. And, of course, in most cases, the employee contribution is paid through the first pickup in the collective bargaining agreement by the employer. Pension benefit will be 1% for general services and 1.35% for police and fire for final average salary.
Can I ask a question about police and fire? My understanding is that generally speaking, police and firefighters retire at age 55 and that they don't collect or will not be able to collect Social Security until they're 68. So for folks in that 55 to 68 category, they will have a reduction in income as a result of this bill, correct? About a 25% reduction in their first retirement income as a result of this bill?
Well, you're talking about the gap period.
Yeah, during the gap period.
But they have a gap period now.
Right, but I assume this will reduce it even further, correct?
It doesn't affect the gap period.
The new hires will have a further reduction in the retirement income between the ages of 55 and 68 under this bill? No. Okay.
Well, it won't affect the gap, but this PERS plus annuity will be on the average 1.47% is the savings on it. So it is not as generous as the existing PERS plan.
So what I'm saying is we're reducing police and firefighters' income. Those who retire, new hires, those who retire between the ages of 55 and 68, their income will be further reduced under this proposal.
Yes.
Okay.
But still within the PERS guidelines, a 50% of your final average.
That, no, because they don't get their Social Security. The PERS guidelines is 75 to 85%, and they won't get the Social Security for another 13 years because they are police and firefighters. I just wanted to clarify that.
But on the 50% of your final average salary, that this tier will provide that 50%.
And Mr. Tim,
yes, thank you.
Just as a matter about the issue of reducing their income, when somebody retires at 50 or 55 years old, normally they're still able-bodied and choose to do some work in another profession, so they won't be totally destitute, number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, these employees do not exist yet. These are people that will be hired at some later date, so to say that we're reducing their income, in a sense, is a phantom you know, we're creating a structure for future employees who do not exist, but many of them, after they retire, go into other occupations, safer occupations. So this is will probably not be their sole income. That's why they don't collect Social Security until they're 68.
Some go into politics.
Safer in politics. Safer in politics.
Well, many of the firemen I've known throughout my life, even when they were firemen, because of their work schedule, had other businesses. So one in Salem and myself, we were painting contractors together. So, but let me.
Yeah, I just don't think we should be forcing folks, particularly police and firefighters, to be looking for other work.
But of course, they can continue to work too. They don't need to retire at 25 years.
I understand, but after 30 years on the police force, I'll shut up.
This third tier will not create any immediate cost savings to employers. It'll take a while, of course, until they have sufficient employees under the proposal to gain some benefit.
Well, I think you could argue this to death, but I do want to point out that I understand that they can work afterwards. But it is interesting in terms of groups of employees that we talked about. We acknowledge we might be a little soft in the area of police and fire, which are the types of essential services that we rely so heavily on in local government. I mean, any kind of budget debate or discussion, the one area they want to protect in terms of budget cuts, et cetera, because I served in the county council for 6 years before I got into the legislature, was police and fire. So, to the extent that we place them at, I won't say, a lesser position, even though they are future employees, prospective employees, I think is a statement about public safety that I don't want to make. But more importantly, in the area of recruitment, I do think that men and women today look at, when they look at their professions and they look at their careers, because I don't think people decide they're just simply going to be a fireman or a personal labor, or a police person for 10 years and get out. I think they're going to make a career of it. I think that's what you do when you go into those types of work. At least most of the people I know, they're going to make a career out of it. And to the extent that we can recruit very good people, we want to do that. And one of the ways you do it, sure, you talk salary, I agree with that, but I think you and I both know other incentives are things like health plan and retirement plan. Because the police officers that I've been on rides with, I'll tell you, you'd be surprised even though they're in good shape. By the time they're in their 40s, the number of fist fights or physical altercations they've had to endure as police officers on their everyday beat take their toll. So very few, if any of them, are going to stay beyond the retirement age. And while firefighters don't get into those kind of physical confrontations with people, their work is such that it does take a grinding kind of toll, so that I would think most will go out at the earliest possible time. I think that's just a given. So I just... it's a philosophical discussion, and maybe this will not affect, it will not affect recruitment. It will not be seen that way. I just think that whatever you can do to be sure that you can recruit the best, and I do think retirement plans, or I do health insurance plans, sometimes are more important than actual for salary types of increases. So, I just put that out there for what it's worth.
Well, I agree. When you look at a profession, you do look at all the benefits, and when we did Senate Bill 750 in 1995, one of the issues we talked about was we had a closed system where the market and the labor market really didn't apply, because for every application for fire, there were hundreds who applied. For most applications for police, there's some exceptions in rural communities, they had more qualified applicants than they could interview. So there seems to be a very energetic group of people that are still finding these professions exciting and what they want to do. And this small adjustment that we're doing here, I don't think will affect that. Plus, in the long term, it ensures that you can hire more police and fire because there's a savings to employers. The estimate in decreased employee contributions for new hires is 1.47. And I think, have I passed this out? Okay. You have in front of you a computation from Steve Delaney at Curve that show that over a 30-year period, that savings would be $5,693 million. And so it does become substantial. And for those who, you know, want to provide more money into education or other programs, ultimately this can provide a source for that and still provide a very generous retirement for public employees. But let me walk through some of the other points, and then we'll continue to have the discussion. By the way, did I open a work session on this? I think I did.
I remember it.
Next, lump sum withdrawal of employer contributions. Currently, you can withdraw the employee contribution. This is at the election of the employee. This would allow you to also withdraw the employer contribution. The benefit to the employee is that then you can have the money and invest it the way you wish, and you may have an immediate need, or you have health problems, and of course, if it stays in the system, you lose it on death. The advantage to the employer is if you withdraw the employer contribution, the COLA doesn't continue. And to continue to make this attractive, the Medicare supplemental insurance at $60 per month would continue. If you recall, the actuary said that even with the supplemental insurance coverage continuing, the benefit to the fund is when the COLA wouldn't be there because of withdrawal. And so that's the way that the amendments read. Pooling for local government employers. This is mandatory rather than optional. If it's optional, of course, it wouldn't work, and we have the testimony on that. But the pooling does not affect current unfunded liabilities. So, for instance, Portland and EWEB, who have unfunded liabilities, would still have to continue to make their payments to PERS to make that up, even if they were pooled after January 1, 2000. Employer participation in the variable account, we've had a lot of discussion of this and the problem it caused, where with a high stock market, and you can go up to 75% in the variable, and then when you retire, go to the money match, and the employer hasn't been in the variable, couldn't be in the variable, you have to match it. This would allow the employer to accomplish that. For state, non-state and school district employees, or employers, the right to withdraw from PERS and set up their own retirement program, and we heard testimony concerning that. So there's some other things, of course, in here, but that's the substance of it. The benefit that I mentioned, the $5.7 billion, doesn't include any savings for the COLA savings if, in fact, the employers elect to take the cash contribution. Right. They are not here. Right. And they were going to provide us with that additional figure today, but they're stuck in traffic. So on the dash fours, Anne, have you had a chance to review those?
Yeah, I had a chance to review the dash threes, and the difference between the threes and fours is, and Dave, hopefully Shake has said if this is incorrect, the only difference is the prohibition community college withdrawal. The rest of it remains the same as the dash threes.
Okay, Dave's nodding his head.
And Mr. Chair and members, also today we received the testimony from the PERS Coalition for the record, and additional testimony from Multnomah County as well.
And that's included in our packet?
I believe so.
All right.
Oh, yes.
You have it, sir?
A letter for them. Yeah. Coalition.
Yes.
Other comments?
You talked to Washington about the community colleges and an alternate plan. Dash 4 takes that away now, or is that...
The Dash 4 makes clear that the community colleges cannot opt out.
They cannot opt.
Right.
They have to stay in.
Right.
Okay.
And I did that because of it wasn't clear with the actuary of whether or not that would have an effect on the plan. Senator Corgi.
Yeah, I understand why you did that, but in a way, that's interesting because I don't know if you consider them state or local employees.
They're pooled with the state as far as PERS is concerned.
That's exactly the logic. In fact, it's, you know, property taxes the school board vote would put, because otherwise it gets, I think maybe not for you, but it gets a little dicey to say all these get to go out, but this group doesn't, when in effect this is more local government in a way. I mean, I realize it's huge. I mean, people can go to community colleges from all the state, but it in some ways there's a property tax involved. There's some girls elected locally, such and such.
Well, and the reason I think that community colleges make a good point, and they want to be treated like OHSU because of the faculty issues and recruitment and affordability of their benefits. But I didn't want to have an argument concerning Senate Bill 722 in any way affecting the actuarial credibility of the fund, and so that's why.
But there's 10,000 people who might get what make the state employee system unstable. That was what we were getting. That what we're sort of not.
Well, if you presume, the question that was posed to the actuary was, let's assume that all the cities and the counties and the special districts opt out.
Right.
What effect would that have on the stability of the fund?
Right.
And his answer was, because the vast majority of the people in PERS are state agencies, state employees, and school districts, it would not affect its stability.
And school districts, you said the vast majority are state school districts?
And school districts.
So they don't get to go out either.
They don't get to go out either.
So school districts are out, they can't go out.
Right.
Community colleges can't go out. Of course, they just can't go out.
Right. So then the next question was, well, what if you allow the community colleges? That concerned them because they're pooled with the other state schools. And so rather than have that concern or that shadow, I'm not convinced it would actuarially affect the system. I just don't want to fight that battle right now and here on the Senate floor. Other comments? If not the chair, then would move the -4 amendment to Senate Bill 722. Discussion.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm going to support the -4 because I've got a real problem with some things that recently my counties and my city have contacted me. And they're going to take a strong look, at least a few of them, at the operating map.
Well, as I said, if they elected to opt out, of course, it would be their decision. That'd probably be a collective bargaining issue, too, and they'd have to do it after January 1 and still leave, make their contributions to PERS for any unfunded mandate. But I appreciate the comments.
No, they can't opt out for their present employees, can they?
No.
This is only for future hires.
Only future hires.
That goes for anybody who's in PERS now, right?
That's correct.
They're bound.
They're bound. Those people stay in PERS.
I made a comparison. I gave the employers that are employees that are there now are not affected by this. In the year 2000, has there been any study made as to what the net result will be for the city and the counties that have a obligation now? Now, for instance, I have one city that has a $200,000 obligation. So they're going to be saving money in the future, though. Will that eventually offset?
Well, for their $200,000 unfunded liability now, they'll be given 38 years rather than 30 to make up the difference. And if they stay in the system, the Tier 3 will gradually save them some money over time.
Okay.
If they chose to opt out, then it would depend upon what type of a retirement plan they would put in.
I'm not actuarial. How many employees now are there in these local government units that could opt out? How many now are involved in PERS? I know it's in our file somewhere. Do you know off the top of your head how many are involved in the local government, you know, perspective, that today if they were opt out, could opt out? How many employees is that involved in all of those government units? Do you know?
Okay. It would be zero today.
No, I know that. But let's say hypothetically, because it's perspective. I just want to, because I don't think a lot of these cities are going to get smaller, they're going to hire employees, there's going to be a turnover of employees, etc. What is the magnitude of employees? Do you know right now?
I know. Of what future hirings would be? I don't have a figure.
But she's saying that in the long term, if every one of those groups that opt out, did opt out, it still would not impact PER system as we know it in terms of its stability and the return to investments and things like that?
Correct.
Jesus.
Questions? All right. Objections to the dashboard?
I'm going to object to the dashboard.
Would you record Senator Courtney as objecting to the dashboard? The chair then would move Senate Bill 722 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. And why don't we call the roll? Have we done
Why don't we just do what we always do?
Well, this is exciting.
Oh, okay, okay. That's
the drama.
Okay. Okay.
No.
Senator Burns,
no.
Senator
Portman,
no.
Senator
Burns, no.
Aye.
Senator
Tito,
aye.
Senator Conrad,
aye.
Senator Brown serves notice of possible minority report.
And Senator Courtney joins the good minority there in that possibility.
The motion carries, and please note for the record that there may be a possible minority report by Senator Brown and Senator Courtney. I'll carry.
Senator Cusab, we may reconsider that motion. You're not I'm going to leave her pretty shaken.
Which one is it?
I just not fun.
Do
we have a sign?
No. Party Cooper. Peter Party Cooper.
We don't have any black.
We're waiting for Aaron.
You know what? That would get in trouble. That's like the old law. In those days, it's gone out for reasons that you should, as a sensitive woman, should understand. I come in blackface. No white man do that anymore. Don't do that anymore. You used to be able to do that. Don't do that anymore.
I'll bring a black turtleneck for you, Peter.
Neil's a turtlenecker. I'm not a turtlenecker. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm not a turtlenecker. Well, I am. Well, I'm a half. We call it half turtle. We call them
mock turtle.
Mock turtle.
Oh, they're out. Anyone on the 60s?
They're not. They're totally in.
What are you talking about? I got my first one the other day.
On Senate Bill 789.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senate Bill 789 is an adoption of the Uniform Child Custody Jurisdiction and Enforcement Act. As you can see from the staff measure summary, the committee has met three times on this already. It's still, at this point, there's a process which has been going on between interested parties. Just wanted to hear from the trial court administrator's office, Gordon Dick from the State Bar is involved, Martha Walters, who's involved in the Uniform Laws Committee in drafting this legislation, has been involved with that. And today you have a dash 4 in front of you, which...
And the dash 5 are coming.
I've just seen the dash 5, which is delightful, because the dash 4 is representing a combination of dash 3s and dash 2s, which were before the committee last time, and the dash 5s are additional agreements which have been made between discussions of the courts, Ms. Walters and Mr. Dick. In essence, the bill, where the changes have been, there's been certain discussions. It's a large bill with a lot of complex issues, and I know your committee is familiar with that after reading the bill and summaries and being involved in this process. But essentially, it involves orders which are done in other states coming into this state dealing with child custody issues. There have been questions about whether the orders are not to be registered in this state, some definitions of some terms in the law, and those things have been resolved up to a point. However, Mr. Chairman, given the time of the session, perhaps might be, if the committee is willing, time, if those other issues are still there, perhaps consider them on the other side.
Well, I think we have to.
I move the dash 4 amendment.
Dash 4 or the dash 5?
Dash 4.
for any bills before in the fund?
It's my understanding that the Dash 5s incorporate the Dash 4s. I've not seen the Dash 5, so I hesitate.
Move the Dash 5.
All right, Senator Brown moves the Dash 5 amendments to Senate Bill 789. Discussion? Hearing no objection? So ordered. Senator Brown moves Senate Bill 789 as amended before you pass. Discussion? Objection? So ordered. Thank you. Senator Brown, would you carry?
I'd be delighted.
Thank you.
I'm sure everyone will get very excited when I talk about the PCJEA, which is a combination of the UCCJA and the PCJEA.
Oh, I'm going to be there. Thank you. The committee deserves a little extra time, and I'm happy to adjourn after 45 minutes rather than 3 hours.
I'm so excited. I was going to go home.